All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Don's Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and I've got John Barber on the phone. And today we're going to talk about some really interesting stuff. We've got some hard numbers on muscle index for you guys, as well as we're going to go over what's in Adonis 3.0, which is coming out officially tomorrow. So you're definitely going to want to get your hands on that. If you're a customer, you should already have your hands on that. If you're not, you're definitely going to jump in on that because it's definitely cool stuff. It represents, you know, basically kind of the culmination of, you know, 3 years of what we've been doing for the longest, all together. And, you know, we've added some things, taken away some things, and really streamlined the approach. So, you know, John, I know you wanted to talk about a couple things. What do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about, you know, what's new, or do you want to talk about some of the muscle index stuff?
Let's get into the muscle index stuff first, and then we'll talk about what's new at the end. So, we talked about muscle index the past couple of weeks, and that's one of the new things, I guess. There's one part of the new package is that it's in, we're offering the muscle index now, so everyone can get their hands on it. So I know I've talked about it theoretically, but now, I posted my muscle index in the forums a couple of days yesterday, I think, and, it came out to 33.4 the last time I measured it, which was, I don't know, maybe 3 months ago or something like that. And so when you look through the muscle index, so I encourage everyone to actually take a couple of days and do the testing to come up with their muscle index. And once we all start putting our numbers, uploading our numbers, we can start getting an idea of what each muscle index looks like. And that will give us a better accurate measurement of true lean muscle mass gains. So everyone's kind of, in the diet and fitness industry, especially in the muscle building industry, people aren't really sure where they're headed. I mean, right now, people just think of pounds. No one really knows how to describe progress. And most people just talk about gaining pounds of muscle or pounds of body weight, which we've already shown is kind of irrelevant. We can go up and down in weight however we want. We can just drink a lot of water and be heavier. So that's too crude of a measurement. That doesn't give us enough of an idea. So the Adonis, clearly with us, the shoulder to waist ratio measurements, what we think is a better indication of the shape you're in. But then the muscle index is actually pretty comprehensive for measuring progress over time. So, and like we've talked about before, it incorporates the size of your, it incorporates your fat mass and your strengths compared to your body weight. So it's a real way of teasing out if you just get bigger, but a good portion of that bigness is just fat mass or carrying water, we can remove that from the equation. And so I think everyone should try to read the manual. It's short. It's to the point. It explains exactly how to test it. There's videos on how to actually, which exercises, how to test them. And then let's get our, if you can, post it on this blog, post it in the forums, wherever. And let's get I want to get a database going of everyone's muscle index and hopefully some pictures to go with it so we have an idea of what each muscle index looks like. So you can see my pick and my muscle index, and then you can put that together because the muscle index itself is dimensionless. It's just a relative scale. So when you see my number in my picture, you're like, oh, that's what a 33 looks like. And then anybody else who's got a 33 should look similar to me. It doesn't matter how tall they are. They should more or less look similar to me. And likewise for anyone whose index is higher and anyone whose index is lower. And we've already run, me and Pilon, when we developed it, we've already run this test on various people, but it'll be good to see more and more people get involved. And then that way it's a better way to chart shorter term progress too. Cause your muscle index could improve dramatically without actually gaining or losing body weight. So you don't necessarily, the scale is just, I mean, it's part of the equation, but it's not the only thing. So we're just trying to replace the old crude way of just saying, well, I got bigger, or I wear a bigger shirt, or I weigh more, with, well, do you actually have more lean mass, and does it look good?
Right. Yeah, and the other thing, too, is definitely read it. Because I know a lot of people would just kind of skip to the end and, you know, just kind of try to figure out everything.
Oh, the calculations, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to kind of read all the material. I mean, that's one of the big things that we kind of run into, you know, all the time. A lot of the questions in the forums and a lot of the questions that come into the support are already answered in the material, a lot of it. A lot of people ask, you know, how do we know that, bulking is BS? Well, it's in the main manual that basically Pilon had access to all this stuff and all this, you know, high end, you know, measurement, you know, equipment and all this stuff and essentially proved it. And so you can see it. It's there. So that's all I'm saying. I mean, that's, you got to read all of the material and kind of get a handle on where all this is coming from before you really jump in, because, you know, there are a lot of people have a lot of questions, but they're already kind of, they're already there. We've done a pretty comprehensive job on what you need to do and how you need to do it.
Yeah, that happens a lot with Eat Stop Eat even. Like, people hear about it and then they have all kinds of questions, and then they haven't even read the book.
Right.
And so, but every single question is literally like a chapter in the book. It's like, what, you know, just read it, reread it if you have to. Like, actually, when I redid this rewrite of 3.0, it was good to reread it all. Like, while I was rewriting and updating it, it was actually pretty cool to actually reread it too. So if you already have it, it's not a bad thing to just reread it and remind yourself why you're doing everything anyways.
Yeah. I mean, most of the stuff is pretty quick. I mean, even though the new manual is 161 pages, I mean, it's a fast read. I mean, I read it in an hour and a half, I think it was. I mean, you can really kind of dig in and go at it. And like I say, a lot of that stuff is there. I mean, a lot of the stuff, you know, when you talk about, especially like Eat, Stop, Eat, I mean, you talk about hormones and what matters, what doesn't. You know, it's good that you're doing something. Don't get me wrong. It's good that people are putting things into action. But again, you know, in order to really embody and own the information, you need to read it and understand it. But it's there, you know. And then after you read it and understand it, if you have questions, by all means, because that probably means we need to add some more material inside. But, you know, from what I've seen so far, I mean, pretty much every question we've ever had is addressed in the material itself.
And we added an FAQ this time.
Right. Exactly.
Partly for that reason too. So.
Yep. Exactly. So. All right, cool. So, you know, we've got muscle index and all that stuff. You want to touch on anything else on that?
Not really. It's just I want to get people going on it and see where people are at with it. So, okay, and another thing, don't guess at your muscle index. Do the test. Like, yeah. There's testing involved with – now, the volume index is just measurements, so that's easy. You just take your measurements and then divide them. Just follow the equation. But the actual strength part, the strength index, which is the other half of it, I have laid out how to go about your testing, and that actually, it's a 2-day procedure. You just need to take 2 off days when you're not working out, and you got to go in and test. There's 5 core lifts you need to test, and you know, I explain how to do them. And like, if you're gonna calculate your index, your muscle index, actually do the test days the way they're outlined, because otherwise you're not gonna get an accurate number at all, and then you won't really. The point of it is to get a pretty accurate number. So, and the only way you can do that is if you do the testing the way it's outlined. If you try to do all of those tests in one day, you won't get the real number. So that's why it's broken out on purpose the way. There's 5 lifts. They're pretty taxing lifts. So I split them up. So you're squatting one day, deadlifting a different day. And then I put a couple lifts with each, so you're not doing all 5 in one day, because your real number won't show through if you try to do them all in one day. And if you just kind of think back to what you think you can do on those lifts, that's still not going to work either. It'd be better if you just did the testing procedure actually the way it's outlined, and then you'll have hard numbers, and you'll have pretty accurate numbers. And then the next time you do your muscle index, just follow the procedure again. And that's, I mean, cause that's the only real way to know if you're improving. If you don't set up your test day the same, your test days and your measurements the same, then you'll never, then you aren't really comparing apples to apples anymore. So like Brad said, I mean, it's a short manual. It's like 10 pages. Just read it through and then follow the testing procedures and just do them as they're outlined. And that way, at least you'll know you've got an accurate number.
Right.
You all right there?
Excuse me, good God. Wrong hole, fool.
Oh, are you taking a drink there?
Yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, no, that's right. I mean, it's, like I say, the material's there. It's been fully vetted once again, and pulled out a lot of the stuff that doesn't matter, and you know, added some more of the stuff that does matter. And, you know, it's important for you to understand it. You know, like I say, each of us has been down the path of every style of way you can work out. And, you know, we've all come back to this because this is what we ultimately wanted. So, you know, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, this is what you want too. So, and you've probably followed the same path where you've been and read and done all this other stuff. Well, we've already done that and we've already teased all this stuff out. So,
yeah, it's part of it's the goal hijacking, like is how we even, I don't know, have we talked about that before on the podcast?
Not necessarily. A little bit on the podcast. I talked about it in a blog post on Friday, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's part of what I updated in the book was the concept of goal hijack. And Opelon talks about it too. But it's really pervasive in this industry. I don't know. Maybe I think it happens like all over the place, but a lot in this industry, people like don't realize when it's happening, and then they look back 5 months later and they're like, "How did I end up here?" And it's because they slowly became a part of a community with an identity. And I guess we're the same too. And I hope we're not really hijacking people's goals. I think we're just trying to be in line with what we think everyone's goal was in the first place. But it's kind of like how powerlifting or CrossFitting or any of these, you know, functional training, whatever that is, any of these other styles of activity, stop being a tool and start becoming an identity. Right. So we've talked about this before, but it's not that there's any person or any small nuclear organization forcing you to be that way. It's that we just flow with where social support seems to land. And if you kind of hang out with powerlifters, it doesn't take long for you to become a powerlifter. It's just sort of, you know, there's only so much like getting teased about not doing the big lifts and about training for aesthetics before you don't want to be teased anymore, so you just start doing what they do if you hang around with them too much. Same with people doing any other style of training. It's that kind of having to defend what you're up to. And I don't know why, but people just tend to – only bodybuilders admit why they're at the gym. Everyone else is pretending they're there for some other reason, and I don't know why. I mean, people doing curls on a Bosu ball, why are you actually doing that? Because do you really want to be able to – be functional standing on a half circle? Like, this is just ridiculous. So I don't understand. I mean, people just forget why they ever went to the gym in the first place. So I don't know if it's because they're bored with their workouts or just they feel the need to try things that look weird or something, and they just end up getting caught up in these other identities, like people who go to like CrossFit competitions to do like consecutive deadlifts. Like, I'm sure somewhere along the line I'm sure when they first went to the gym, their goal was never to be able to deadlift as many times as they could in a minute. Or it just all of a sudden they look back and they're like, how did I end up here? And it's not like you're making money at any of this stuff. So, like pro athletes, I get it. They may have weird workouts because it's their strength coach designed something specific for what they do. And it could look pretty odd. But other than that, you know, everyone else is going to the gym just to improve the way they look. I mean, I highly doubt anyone goes to the gym to be functional in specific lifts for specific time frames when they're not getting paid to be athletes. So, right. I mean, and health comes along with just about any activity. So it's not a health argument too. So to me, it's a hijacking of goals, and then it becomes an identity. People just get lost in these various identities, and I think they just know they got to go to the gym, and they're going to go, and I think they just get bored, and then they lose track of what they're doing, and then they just latch onto something that's interesting, but then that fades too, and then they're sort of – all this effort's put out, but they're not really sure where it's taking them.
Right. You know what's funny? You brought up the money part and the pro athletes, and you get it, but you know the funny – it's interesting because there's money on the line on the other side too. You know, the pro athletes do it because they have a specific performance that's going to make them more money, but you know, there's – I mean, it's kind of proven in all the literature that, you know, having a good looking body is, you're going to make more money. I mean, I think it, what was it, like 5 to 8% more on average?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the hiring bias and the promotion bias. Yeah. If you're getting in shape, you're going to win out over people who aren't in shape as far as promotions and getting hired and things like that. So, yeah, money's at stake both ways.
Right. So, I mean, if your financial interest lies within, you know, you performing a certain way, then obviously that's the way you should train. If it doesn't, then, you know, perhaps think about, you know, training in a different way that's going to improve that. And that's, you know, obviously a, you know, the broader your shoulders are, the better off you're going to be.
And, it's not that people who do these other training styles can't build a good looking body that way and one sure. that provides a benefit. It's more of an efficiency thing. Like, are you spending right. extra time in the gym doing stuff that you kind of otherwise just don't really need to do, or have you adopted a lifestyle that you sort of, you know, did you really want that lifestyle? Like, I don't know. It just seems like so many people really are just floating around in the gym, not really sure what they're up to.
Right. Well, yeah, again, it kind of goes back into the identity of, you know, you're wrapping your whole life around a certain identity that, you know, kind of comes to that. I mean, you know, if you're like my buddy who's at the gym, I mean, he's a bodybuilder, competes and stuff. I mean, like literally, I mean, that's what he does. You know, he's a hell of a personal trainer and he helps people out and stuff. But I mean, he competes. I mean, he's got tubs of stuff hanging out in his office. I mean, he's got a cooler in there and all that type of stuff. I mean, literally, that's what he does and that's his goal. And that's totally fine. That's totally fine because that's what he wants to do. I don't think most people want that. It's the same thing with, you know, powerlifting and things like that. I mean, those guys are in the gym, and what were you saying, 3 hours a day?
Yeah, the guys I hang out to sometimes between 2 and 3. And the thing is, all of them are extreme. Like, there's you can take your exercise habit to the extreme any direction. Like, people who do marathons and people who start trying triathlons and they're getting into all that stuff. Like, that's fine if it's your hobby. I mean, that's totally – I don't – you know.
Yeah, we're not bashing it.
Yeah, anything. Bodybuilding, you name it. But it just, you know, was it really your goal or did you really care? And if it starts becoming your lifestyle, what is that really what you wanted? And so kind of mixed in there is the you're going to adopt some kind of training style as your hobby, but it is the end result. Is it really just a time distance running? Is it for marathoners, or is it a time versus distance in three disciplines as a triathlete? Is it strength in three lifts as a power lifter? Is it whatever the CrossFitters do where they just, you know, pick some random exercise and do it as many times as they can? Or for bodybuilders, is it a look, right? So my guess is that most people are more concerned about a look than any of those other things. And I'm not saying you have to take it to the extreme that bodybuilders do, because the look they go after kind of gets a little weird too. But in general, none of those things are defined by a look. All of those things are defined by some other metric, some like distance for time or strength. Like, it's not actually what most people started out with, which was probably just, quote, get in shape. So most people start out wanting a look and end with some community of people who, you know, praise them for being really strong but fat, or you know, really skinny but can run very far. So it's that's what we mean by hijacking goals. You know, you get positive feedback, but then all of a sudden you don't look, the original goals disappeared.
Right. Yeah, and it's not because let's be honest. I mean, everybody has something to sell. I mean, that's how the economy works. I mean, we sell and buy. I mean, that's commerce and currency. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you just have to realize that. Yeah, I mean, even us. I mean, we've got to fund R&D. You know, we've got to fund payroll. I mean, that's nature of the beast. You know, that's why we have stuff for sale. But so just understanding that almost everybody's opinion about the subject is kind of influenced, you know, obviously, by, you know, what they personally do. So, you know, a lot like a person who is, you know, let's say a powerlifter or a person that's a bodybuilder. I mean, the advice he's going to give you is probably going to be reinforced, and he's just reinforcing himself, you know, about what he's doing is correct. And you see it a lot. I mean, people really extrapolate research a lot of times just to prove a point, just to kind of prove that what they're doing is correct and things like that. But, you know, you have to really, like I said before, you have to write down your goal. And you have to look at what advice is being given. And if it matches up with a goal that you have on paper, then that's great. If it doesn't, you don't need to find a new goal. You need to go find new advice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the difference. So instead of, you know, I'm all for fluidity and stuff like that. If you find something that works better for you, if you find a better goal for yourself that you yourself decide is better and what's really what you want. But, you know, when you get to a point where you're kind of, you don't really have a goal. You don't know what you want. It becomes very easy for people to kind of influence, and you're kind of like a flag. You know, people can blow you any which way.
Right, and you can have a multi-part goal. You could be like, I want to have a really good muscle index, but also be able to run 10K or as fast as I can. Or I want to have, you know, a golden AI, but I also want to be able to bench press 350 pounds. Like you can set, like, you know, combined goals and then try to. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of guys ask, what do you do when you get to golden ratio? It'd be like, well, I don't know, see what else you can do with it. See how much leaner you can get at that size. See how much stronger you can get at that size. See what, you know, if any of those things are interesting to you. Or see how little work you can do to stay at that size if you've got other things you need to do. So there's all kinds of, I mean, it takes just as much work to stay there as it does to get there. So it's not like all of a sudden you just stop. But once you're there, you can also start working on other things. I don't know, maybe you want slightly bigger arms, or maybe you still think, you know, your chest needs to come up, or your back or something, whatever it is. There's still lots more to do once you get there. So it's sort of always ongoing, but, you know, as long as you're honest with yourself, I guess. And I know we sound like a broken record here, but it just seems like people are always testing out or trying new things. I think it's rooted in a lack of patience. People just want things to happen way faster than they can happen. So, you know, getting back to the example of wherever my muscle index is right now, it's not like I got there in the first year I trained. Like, it takes time to get there. So people who aren't there, it's, you know, it takes time. I mean, there's a jump at the beginning. Most beginners know what that feels like when they have that big burst at the beginning, but after a while the gains come slower. They still come, but they come slower. So, you know, and that's why body weight's kind of useless for experienced guys, because they realize they don't have that huge jump in body weight like beginners do. So that becomes – it actually becomes discouraging if you're trying to measure progress with body weight, because it doesn't change. Even though you could actually be building muscle, you can't measure it with a scale. So you got to find some other way. Well, that's why we do it with the muscle index.
Right. So like, since you talked about that, let's talk about kind of sub-goals, because I know we wanted to go into this a little bit. Let me tell you a little bit of a story about how I kind of came around. I remember when I was in high school, and it's really weird. I could show you pictures while I was really thin, and then obviously, you know, I don't think I was ectomorphic at all, because obviously I got up to 215 pounds and I was fat. So, you know, there's something different there. So I could say, hey, I went from – it'd be funny. I could show my high school basketball picture, which you can see on Facebook, and – you can see that and say, man, that dude's skinny. And then you can see me now. I'm like, man, he's pretty big. And I could make the claim that, you know, I know how to get somebody skinny to this. But then again, I've also got the fat picture of me, and I'm leaner now. So, you know, I could, and if I showed you the whole kind of what the spectrum of what I went through, I couldn't make a claim that I was an ectomorph or whatever. Right. But when I was in high school, I remember our basketball coach, you know, told me from ninth grade to 10th grade, he was like, you know, you need to be able to bench a certain amount when basketball season comes around, when it was 10th grade. And I remember when basketball season came back around and we got in the bench to test. I mean, because I didn't work out at all. I mean, I just kind of threw it off. I mean, literally, I mean, me and a couple other dudes couldn't even bench like 95 pounds. I remember it. I was like, damn. And I remember looking up on the board where the football players would do all of their lifts and have all these clubs and stuff. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, man, this is bad. And of course, now I know later, I'm just finding out that a lot of the guys that were even in high school were doing some extracurricular type stuff to get those strength levels. Mm-hmm. that I had no idea about. But anyway, kind of going back to the story, even in college, when I was a freshman, I remember myself and my buddy Brian, we'd go into the gym, and I remember, like it was yesterday, that, you know, getting on the incline bench and only being able to do, you know, nickels on each side, shoulder press only being able to, or not nickels, but dimes, and shoulder press only being able to do nickels on each side. And I remember specifically that I had a goal, and that goal was to be able to put 45s on each side. That was my goal. I was like, I got to get to this point right here, because I felt like that was like this threshold. You know, we've talked about thresholds before, like everybody feels like that they have to be 200 pounds, like there's this 200-pound threshold. So, and wear extra-large shirts. But that was kind of my threshold.
Yeah, to be able to put plates on the bars all of a sudden, like another level of strength.
Right, exactly. It was like that – because it seemed like everybody else was there. So I kind of wanted to be in, and that looked like a dumbass. So that was my first goal. And I remember, you know, once I when I got to that point, I remember it was great. I felt like I belonged in the gym. I'm sure other people have felt the same way. I'm not describing an experience that's odd. I mean, it's probably something like that. But that kind of goes, it increases. So it went from, you know, 45s on the bar to 45s plus a 25. So from 135 to 185. And then it went from, you know, one plate to two plates. And you know, it kept going up by 45s and quarters. Quarter being a 25.
Yeah, like I started out training at home, and I didn't even in high school, and I didn't even want to go to the gym until I could use at least 45s aside on like bench press and stuff like that. And then once I graduated up to, you know, in my eyes, getting to the gym, and I was actually using at least a plate aside. Like you said, the very next thing was like, oh man, the big guys here do at least two plates aside. So I'm like, I have to do that. So, and then it's just, you know, you go up and, you know. I even thought a plate and a quarter just looked small. I'm like, but that's still not two plates. So and that was sort of the judge of, to me, that was like where the strong guys, the bottom level of the strong guys was two plates aside, not one plate. So,
right.
But for me to even feel confident at the gym at all, I didn't even show up until I could already do a plate.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, and I give credit to the kids who show up that can't even do that. Cause I was too insecure and embarrassed when I was younger to even show up without having at least that base level strength. So kids who show up who can't even do that, good for them. I mean, now I realize that nobody's judging them anyways and nobody cares. But, you know, I didn't recognize that when I was younger. And so the thing just keeps moving along. So when I was when I started using testosterone, the new baseline weight was three plates. So being able to push three plates was the new baseline. So the thing just keeps going. And it's, you know, that, I don't know if that sounds a little bit ridiculous, but that's kind of where the next level was. So there's always a stronger person. There's always somebody that you're stronger than. So it kind of doesn't matter. And people at the gym don't really care.
Right. No, yeah, there's a common, or at least for most of us, what I can understand, there's a kind of a common baseline respect that kind of, that's just there. I mean, everybody knows. I mean, the big guys aren't really looking at you like, you know, scrawny bastard. You know, I mean, or even, you know, if you're overweight, I mean, nobody looks at you like that. The only thing that people judge from my perspective is if you look like that you have an idea of what you're doing. That's it. It's not a matter of, you know, you being whatever shape you're in. It's, do you look like you have an idea of what you're doing while you're there? You know, that's the only difference that I can say.
And yeah. Are you there with a purpose? And two things. Are you there with a purpose, and does it look like you know that what you're doing is moving you towards that?
Right. I mean, I think that's the only judgment I try not to judge. It's tough, but it's not really a judgment as much as it's more of a, hey man, you need some help kind of thing.
An observation. Well, sometimes you see people doing something and you're looking and you're like, oh, I'm almost positive I know what they're trying to do. And I also know that what they're doing isn't going to get them there.
Right.
And then sometimes you see people and you're like, I can't even guess what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, kind of an unsaid thing that we've never said before, you know, especially about, you know, our workouts and things like that. And then I'll talk about some of my current goals is, and one of the things that keeps guys out of the gym, because I felt like this, and, you know, just like you were saying with the amount of weight you were using, is the fact that you feel like you know what you're doing while you're there. Because, you know, even though you're not really on show, I mean, you kind of feel like you are. So you want to actually look competent while you're there, that actually, like, you know what you're doing. And, you know, some people hide that with headphones. They'll use headphones to put those on so they can seem like they're focused and know what they're doing. But, you know, any kind of casual observer can know the difference. But that's kind of one of the things that I see, and I've you know, in my years of talking to people, like I said, I've probably talked to 8,000-10,000 people face to face over the years, you know, just in this game. You know, one of the things that people were most afraid of was looking like they didn't know what they were doing. It wasn't that they were necessarily overweight, or it wasn't that they necessarily were weak. It was actually looking like they were competent enough to actually get a specific result. So, you know, if that's something that you feel when you're in the gym, I mean, definitely, you know, investing in a program so that you actually are confident that you know what's going on, that can be a lifesaver for some people. So.
Oh, and we had a good question. This is actually a really good one. Somebody asked about getting a personal trainer to show them how to do some lifts, and with proper form. And there's a catch there. Most trainers can teach you the lifts, even the complicated ones like squatting and deadlifting. But the trick there is they're almost always going to try to sell you their program versus ours or any program you're following. So it's really hard for them to resist just shooting down anything you're looking at and wanting you to follow what they're doing. So then you're going to be stuck with the sort of battle between, you know, how do you hire a trainer for like two sessions saying, can you just teach me the squat, the deadlift, and this other lift? I don't want your program design. I'm paying you to teach me the form on these lifts. That's highly unlikely that you'll actually be able to pull that off without them talking you out of anything, my program or anybody else's, and into theirs. And that's pretty difficult to get that. My suggestion, and this was in the forum, was to actually scan the gym, find some, you know, look for some guys who look like they know what they're doing. Like literally, you look at their form. They I guess like what Brad, what you were just saying, look at some guys that look like they know what they're doing. And be like, hey, I'm kind of new to this. Can you spend a couple minutes just teaching me squat form? Like, do you mind? And some of the bigger guys, as long as they're not like right in the middle of, you know, a serious workout, if you can catch them at the beginning or the end, they'll likely help you. Like I help kids all the time. Like any kid in the gym who's just, you know, if they see me doing something, they're like, hey, you know, what exactly is that? I'll show them. Like, you know, they'll appreciate it. And at least that way, if you just approach some other member, they aren't going to try to sell you anything, and they won't care what program you're following. You've just asked, be like, hey, I noticed that you know how to do squats. Can you give me a pointer or two here? And you know, if they offer 2-3 minutes of help, that's great. And it's not going to be a loaded exchange. They're not going to try to get anything out of you besides, because most guys in the gym don't mind helping younger guys in the gym or older. Doesn't matter how old you are, how old the person is, if they're competent and they can afford a couple of minutes, you know, most people will help. I don't know why, but there's something about that. Like people that are there will typically always help somebody else. And you know, if they're really that busy, they'll be like, look, I'm kind of, you know, I don't really have the time right now, but then that's fine. But you know, there will be somebody there that can help you. Just be aware that trainers are out to make money, and their number one order of business, especially when you approach them, won't be to just sell you one session and be like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll sell you one session. I'll teach you exactly how to squat and deadlift. They're thinking, wow, that guy just approached me. I'm going to get $2,000 out of this guy and sell him 30 training sessions. Like that's what they're thinking. And they're going to, no matter what program it is, even if they believe in the program you show them, they're going to somehow shoot it down or say that they can improve it or tweak it or something to try to get you to get them on board. So they're going to try to build a level of doubt in you that what you're doing by yourself will just never be as good as if you join them. So that's why I'd be very wary of approaching one for any kind of advice on anything. You're just not getting free advice or free format, free teaching out of them, whereas the other more experienced members in the gym could easily teach you form for free.
Yeah, it's really funny. I mean, I would definitely approach the guys that look like the bodybuilder types as personal trainers, like the bigger dudes. I wouldn't necessarily like the guys that are skinnier. I probably wouldn't mess with.
Oh, I see. Like out of the group of trainers, even if you were going to approach a trainer, yeah, I would just go straight to the bodybuilders in the gym, the members, and just be like, yeah, hey, you know. Maybe not that you're trying to get into it, just be like, or, you know, and if you get to know them, they might take you under their wing as a training partner. Yeah. So there's different things you can do. It's just, if all you want's form, just look for people who have good form and just say, hey, can you teach me that for 5 minutes?
Yeah. Well, that's like my buddy, like I say, that is a bodybuilder. I mean, he helps dudes, people, I mean, women, whatever. I mean, he'll come by, give some helpful tips or whatever. I mean, like really helpful tips like if he kind of walks by somebody and, you know, he sees something like, especially squats. Like he saw something with me the other day. He's like, yeah, dude, you definitely got to loosen up your hips a little bit. Mm. I was like, all right. He's like, what do I need to do with that? And he was like, he showed me something. I was like, all right, sweet. And sure enough, as soon as I did that, I was able to lift more. And so, you know, there are going to be people to help you out. But here's the thing that I've never went into this before, but this is really important to understand about personal training. This is the dirty trick of personal training that nobody knows about. So if you're in the gym, and like I say, I've seen it, I've talked to people, I know exactly the sales process for this. The one thing about personal training is that it's ongoing income. Nobody likes to lose a client. And so one of the sneaky ways that they keep clients is they do a lot of tandem things. Because if you do tandem things and you get people addicted to doing tandem things, well, you can only do tandem things when you have two people. So you have to keep paying. So you get this kind of thing infused in your head that the only way you're going to get results is if you pay, because then that's the only way you can do these specific exercises.
Oh, like throwing a medicine ball back and forth where there literally needs to be a partner there.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah, I gotcha.
I mean, a lot of stuff like that. I mean, that's no secret. I mean, there are probably going to be trainers that get mad at me for saying that, but it's the truth. I mean, I've seen it time and time again. You go into the gym right now and you look, pretty much every trainer has, I would say 75% of trainers have people doing things that are something in tandem that it requires two people to do.
It's by design, and it's trying to increase the perception of the trainer's value in that relationship.
Right. And that's where a lot of the functional training comes in as well. Like from my perspective on functional training, I mean, if you're older, like 50 plus, I mean, yeah, it might be a little bit different, but if you're younger, I don't think so. Like they talk about balance and things like that, but I know this, like the other day I lost my step as I was walking down the steps, and I kind of caught myself on one leg, and it was one of those things where I felt it, that if I hadn't been lifting at all, like it would have ended badly, right? But I'm
the definition of functional training is whatever function you want.
Right.
There's no blanket functional training. There's training that enhances some kind of function, but you have to define it first.
Right. So what I'm getting to is that the things that are selling points for a lot of this stuff, like improving your balance and reducing risk for injury, I mean, those things are including in any type of exercise and weight training.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, that's kind of the thing. I mean, I literally lost my balance and had to catch myself. And, you know, if I hadn't been working out or anything, I mean, I've been there in the past and I felt it, where you kind of you catch yourself a certain way, and you probably would have hurt yourself.
Especially if you were both heavier and weaker.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. So it had nothing to do with me practicing catching myself or working out on uneven surfaces or anything like that. It was the fact that my body was stronger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's as far as benefits in elderly people, it's in the senior population, it's strength training by itself is what produces all the benefit. It's not all this weird standing on unstable platforms, and that's just a lack of understanding of how the neuromuscular system even coordinates itself. That balance is incredibly specific. So if you train with a 5-pound weight tied to your leg and you're walking or lunging or squatting, that's a different neuromuscular activation pattern than if that 5-pound weight's not tied to your leg. Same thing as if you're standing on a BOSU ball versus standing on the ground. All that training on a BOSU ball does is make you good at standing on a BOSU ball. It doesn't translate into having better balance on the ground, because it's a completely different neuromuscular pattern. It's kind of like saying that training in a pair of running shoes on a basketball court improves your ability to skate, like in hockey skates. It's the modes of transportation and the actual balance system is specific to the what you're standing on. So there's no reason why skating would make you better at standing on and moving around on a basketball court, and there's no reason why playing basketball makes you that much better at skating. So that's the analogy I think resonates the best, because anyone who can't skate who's tried realizes how hard that is, and anyone who can skate realizes that that doesn't make you better at exercises without your skates on. And that's the same thing as standing on a stupid ball or any of those weird things. It just is nothing to do with functional balance. So if you want to be better balanced in real life situations, you need to be standing on the ground in real life situations, not on a stupid half ball. So whatever. I mean, obviously this is a point of contention with me. It just irritates me to no end, because I have friends that do all the research in this field, and it's what you see in the gym has nothing to do with what the actual research is saying.
Right. Yeah. All right. So let's really quickly, let's kind of touch on some sub goals. Like I was kind of talking about, like what mine are right now. For a perfect example of sub goals, you know, obviously we're looking for a specific shoulder to waist ratio. I mean, that's obviously the overall goal, but I always have a strength goal. I always do. I always, you know, have an eye on what I want to accomplish. And so, like, right now, you know, I work 75s, 80s in dumbbell shoulder presses. Like, my goal is to get up to 100s. I don't know if that's possible, but it's my goal. So I want to be able to press 100s.
Overhead for at least one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of my goal, you know, but that goal also ties into, you know, my other goal, which is, you know, obviously if I can press hundreds, it means my shoulder mass is bigger, which means my AI is better.
And then, you know, your muscle index is higher.
Right, exactly. As far as chest and stuff like that, I mean, I want to get back up to, you know, hovering around 315, which is, like I say, you know, I'm kind of working back into it because I've been kind of low calorie for a while, but I'm not now kind of, you know, eating normally, so hopefully within the next, you know, maybe 3 months, I can be there. Legs wise, which is interesting, I think I'm transitioning into more of a performance based thing, where I want to be able to like dunk on people again, and so I'm going to be working on more of that type of stuff, more explosive type training. And like I say, that's just me. Back in the day, I could do not really like all over people because I was shorter. I was only like 5'9" then, but you know, now that I'm, you know, 5'11", 6 foot or whatever, you know, that's something I want to do. You know, I always have naturally kind of a little bit bigger legs, so I don't really have legs to work on, so to say. I don't have a squat goal per se. I don't have a deadlift goal. I have a performance goal.
And that's a good example of a combined goal. That's some performance goal and some aesthetics goal.
Right. Yeah, but they all tie together. I mean, it's not like I'm
– sure.
But I also know that all of my goals help me out in regular life. Like when I go play softball, like just lifting more helps me swing a bat faster, which means I can hit more home runs. You know, flat out. I know the difference. I felt the difference. I don't do any specific training for that, but just having a better base level of strength has helped me out with that.
Sure.
So I'm not going out to improve my softball swing or anything like that. Like I'm not actually doing that movement.
Just sort of side effect. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of an indirect effect with that. So. And you know, for most people, I mean, you don't need in life, you don't really need any specifics. Like being better than average just means having a better than average base strength level, in my opinion, from what I've seen. So being a better than average hitter in softball, I mean, as long as you can hit the ball, you know, as far as distance and how many home runs you're going to hit, it's going to be a difference of, you know, how quickly you can move the bat. So, and that's going to come across with, you know, bigger strength levels or higher strength levels or either longer arms.
So like you can't, well, you can't do that.
Well, yeah, you can't control that. So
yeah, I'm just going for a higher muscle index.
Right.
Which, I mean, if you read it, you'll realize how many things are built into that goal.
Sure.
So that's bigger and leaner all at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
And an overall bigger and leaner. So it's not bigger in one area because when you see the way it's calculated, it's kind of impossible to move your muscle index without everything going up. So,
right. Yeah. So that's kind of the embedded thing is, you know, with muscle index, all of the sub goals or a lot of the sub goals like that I would personally have, like, you know, wrapped around strength, you know, I talk about, you know, I want to get to this point or I want to get to this point or this is my dream goal of being able to lift. I mean, notice I didn't say, you know, I was lifting 50s and I wanted to jump up to 100s. You know, that's kind of an unrealistic sub goal. I mean, that might be a meta goal, but
yeah, like a much longer term goal.
Yeah, but you know, something in 90 days. You know, there's something special about 90 days. I don't know what it is, but there's something special about 90 days. That, you know, as far as a mid to short term goal. I mean, if it's achievable within 90 days,
it's long enough away to make a relatively significant jump seem realistic, but close enough that it doesn't feel like it's going to take forever.
Yeah, and it flies, too.
I mean, it goes by quick. Oh, yeah, speaking of that, where are we? Almost exactly halfway?
For the transformation contest?
Mm-hmm.
November, mid-November, I think it is.
November 24th, we're at the 18th, so it's, what, 5 weeks left, basically?
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, that's good, too. So, you know, guys can definitely I'm looking forward to seeing those picks come in.
Yeah. Like there's, I've already seen some people have given us previews, and people are really, really progressing. Yeah. All right, so I guess let's wrap this one up.
All right. Well, really quickly, as a wrap up, kind of some of the new stuff going in 3.0. Obviously, it's been expanded a little bit. There's 30 more pages in with some more research and things like that to really clarify. We've taken some things out. That's in the main manual. The one thing that's also been included that we discovered that was necessary was a muscle building foundation 12-week program. We're finding that a lot of people just don't have the foundational muscle to carry on with the next phase, which was the first phase. So we've actually included that inside as well. So there's 12 weeks there. We actually got rid of the build and burn, and burn systems. They were basically just kind of rearrangements of different modules anyway. And so now there's 16 weeks. So there's four four-week modules now.
Plus various rage modules. So the base run-through is 20 weeks.
Yeah, it's 20 weeks. So it's the rage is – there was additional rage that's put into, which is a conditioning rage, which is – no, that's the fourth that's included.
That's the new one. Yeah, it's the fourth. So there's chunks of the workout that, depending on where you started, you would have never been exposed to before, and now you'll be exposed to everything that was in the system. And right. The muscle index, that's like a significant new piece as well.
Well, and the other big thing too is that we're also including the – this was a big kind of point of contention because we know that everybody isn't starting in the same place. And so you're going to have lagging body parts and things like that. So we basically are including all the specialization workouts that you can put in when you get to the main workout series. Where, so if you have a lagging body part, you know, after you finish the 12-week foundation series – you know, you can bring that up to speed. You know, you can actually put in a little bit more work for those particular body parts, like twice a week, you know,
so,
the shoulders.
Right. So before the boosters weren't part of the main program, now they are.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, we've got some other stuff. I've actually got a piece called Introduction to Psychological Warfare or Self-Psychological Warfare, which is it's not anything special. It's not really self-helpy. All it is basically all the mistakes that we've kind of uncovered over the past 3 years that people are making when it comes to getting stuff done in the gym and in their life, when it comes to this type of thing. You know, it comes to, you know, goals, misinformation, what's important, what's not. That kind of, I don't want to say it's a mindset thing because it's really not. It's nothing like that. But what it is it's a short manuscript that really gets down to the one thing that's going to get you results, and that's action. So teasing out everything that you don't need to be concerned about and really getting into action, what's important, what's not, what's and when and how to test and not guess at what you're going at. So right. That's going to be kind of important. That's probably going to be the first thing you'll probably want to read even before the main manual, just to kind of get wrap your head around what we're getting ready to talk about and why it's relevant and that type of stuff. So is there anything else other than videos and stuff like that are included, you know, so that you don't get lost in, you know, the exercise manuals and stuff? I mean, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, it's expanded quite a bit.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's probably stuff we're forgetting, but it's, you know, you'll discover it as you're looking through.
Yep, exactly, man. So you got anything you want to wrap up on that?
No, that's it.
All right.
Oh, man. I mean, last note, Venus is second week in November.
Yep, second week in November for Venus. We'll have a free webinar that's going to go over a lot of that at the beginning of November.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you're a lady and you're listening, definitely go to venusindex.com. Go ahead and opt in. We'll get you some information on that in the next week or so. And, you know, it's good stuff. So, but I guess that's all we've got. So, for John Barbin, I'm Brad Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.